This is Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you listening this morning as we go into hour number two of the show. The producers for the program, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, and at the controls today, Jason Croft. We expect our schools to teach children fundamental academic skills, reading and writing and math and critical thinking. But there are many educators who feel that, now, of course, they feel that's important, but they also feel that that's only doing part of the job. They argue that social and emotional skills should be part of the curriculum at every level of school, and they argue that when students learn to manage their emotions and care for others and establish positive relationships, not only are those things good in and of themselves, that the academic performance of students actually improves. In this part of Focus, we'll be talking about social and emotional learning. And our guest for the show is Mary Utney O'Brien. She's Executive Director of the Collaborative for Academic, Social, and Emotional Learning at the University of Illinois at Chicago, where she is also professor of psychology. Just a bit more about her in terms of background. Her academic training actually is in sociology. She has served as senior survey director at the National Opinion Research Center at University of Chicago. That was throughout the 1980s, and when she was there, she designed and managed a number of complex federal surveys, including some for the Department of Education. She also has been associate professor of epidemiology in the School of Public Health at University of Illinois, Chicago, and there she taught the school's first courses in the epidemiology of HIV/AIDS. She is joining us this morning by telephone. And as we talk, questions are certainly welcome. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. So that means that if it would be a long-distance call, use that number, the toll-free number, and the call will be on us. And that is 800-222-9455. So again, here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455 and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Professor O'Brien, hello.
Good morning, David.
Thanks for talking with us.
Well, I'm delighted to be here.
Just to start off with, I think probably for people who aren't really familiar with this idea, I should ask a very basic question and have you give me a definition of social and emotional learning.
Social and emotional learning is the process that children go through and adults to acquire skills that give them the ability to manage their own feelings in appropriate and productive ways, to form good relationships with others, to communicate effectively, to have empathy with others, be able to listen effectively, to have high-quality relations, and finally to be good problem solvers, to know how to address problems in constructive ways where they can think through alternatives and make healthy choices based on a realistic assessment of where they're coming from, what they're feeling, what their strengths are, what the circumstances are that are going on around them. So it's really a set of life skills that some people roll up under the title of emotional intelligence.
I'm sure that there are people who would argue that that kind of learning, those sort of skills, are the kinds of things that children can and probably should pick up outside of school, and that the primary teachers, if you want to use that word, the primary teachers can be, should be, ought to be the parents, and that it's not something that should be a primary mission of public schools particularly, that is, we say the primary mission is, you know, all those things I talked about at the beginning, reading, writing, math, science, history, and that the schools, it's enough. They have their hands full trying to do that, and that you can't do this too. So I guess here I'm really saying two things. One is, isn't that the parents' job? And two, isn't that asking too much of schools to do that too?
Well, let me answer in reverse order. Well, I'll answer all over the place. It's a great question, and it's one that schools sometimes pose, but we almost never hear it from parents themselves. Parents, in our experience, appreciate all the help they can get in helping to raise their kids to be healthy, caring, responsible citizens. And when we speak with educators, we quickly get to the observation that they've actually posed a false choice. that children, we don't have to choose between the social and emotional development of our kids and their academic performance and development, because these are inseparable in children. Teachers today and always have had to deal with the kid who walks in the door, the whole package of concerns, distractions, anxieties, excitements that children walk in with every day, and have to take that into account and bring it into hand, help children manage themselves so they can focus on the task at hand. And when we get to adolescence, teachers literally have to get kids to come in the door. That students drop out of school often when they're disaffected, when they find it uninteresting. So a big part of social and emotional learning, in addition to the skills that I taught, or as a means of teaching those skills, is creating a context that is a safe and caring learning environment for kids in which they feel connected to the school, engaged, and through that connection, attached to the values of the school, and so they invest themselves in their learning. So one of the things we ask principals, for example, is in this time of No Child Left Behind, when people's backs are against the wall, to assure high test scores and improvements in test scores annually, we say, do you really think that you can reach your bottom 25% performers by instructional means alone? And it doesn't take much of a pause for people to realize that, no, they have to engage kids, they have to get them to come in, they have to get them to focus their attention and to really be motivated to listen to what the teachers have to do and to engage in their own instruction. And that's a big part of what SEL is all about, helping the child who's coming in distraught because they've just heard their parents arguing as they left the house, or maybe they got dumped by their girlfriend in the hallway and they're really, the last thing they're thinking about is school, helping them to have strategies to calm down, to focus their attention, to come back into the moment and figure out how to deal with those feelings that have been aroused in more productive ways.
And I suppose here, again, there, if we ask this question about why is this important, one of the points that I'm sure that you would like to make, and others who make the argument for formalizing social and emotional learning and actually making that a part of your curriculum, is that you argue that, and you've got data to back it up, that not only is it kind of a good thing just generally, and does it make for students that are perhaps ready to learn and more motivated to learn and in a mood to learn, but that you actually can point to academic improvement, so that there is you can actually draw a line between social emotional learning and academic success. And if you want to ask a question, well, why should we do it? You could say, well, we can show you that by having that be part of the curriculum, that you can actually see students' academic performance improve.
Exactly right. We're very excited at the research coming out now, and we're the authors of a bit of it, in that we're just completing a major, major study, the most extensive look at SEL intervention. I use the jargon, I should explain. SEL is shorthand for social and emotional learning in the world of educators. We're finding out that SEL, as good as it is in itself, is great education. It's a great framework for schools to adopt as they approach all that they do with children, and the data are coming in very strong, showing that children who also receive, in addition to their regular instruction, receive explicit instruction in social and emotional learning, and these are very teachable skills. That's, as an aside, I should say, many people are surprised. They think, oh, you either have it together or not, or you came from a family that really, you know, was together, and somehow you have these good interpersonal skills and you have a lot of self-knowledge and self-awareness, or you don't, but it's the luck of the draw. But in fact, these are skills that can be taught really at any age, but best with the younger we start, for children to become more self-aware, self-managing, and good problem solvers. And they bring this right to the classroom, and the data show at least returns I literally looked at about an hour ago of a major meta-analysis or synthesis of other studies, of multiple studies, a statistical synthesis shows that classroom-based instruction in this has at least a 10 percentage point increased impact on standardized test scores of students. And in this day and age where we're trying to eke out any percentage points at all from any source, it's very powerful stuff. We're eager to be spreading the word on this.
Let me introduce again our guest. We have a caller. We'll get right to. We're talking with Mary Utney O'Brien. She is the executive director of the Collaborative for Academic, Social, and Emotional Learning that is based at the University of Illinois Chicago. She's also professor of psychology at the U of I Chicago. By the way, the Collaborative does have a website. If you have internet access and you're interested in reading more on the subject, you can go there and find out what it's all about. Questions here, too, are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. And we have a caller to start us off here, and I believe they're in Champaign, line number one. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. What proportion of the school day would this occupy, and at what level, would this replace the current course in social science at the junior high level?
Great questions. The research is pretty clear about what ways of doing this yield the greatest impact for kids' learning of the skills and of the good impacts of those skills themselves. The data show that if we spend about between 20 and 30 minutes 2 to 3 times a week, and that we do this over the course of the year at least at a minimum of 8 kinds of sessions like this, so 8 weeks of such sessions, that if we do this all the way pre-K through 12, ideally, and so in response to your question about what level, pre-K through 12, and that this, while it's important that the skills be taught on their own as opposed to totally embedded in other curricula, we also find that when teachers have opportunities to reinforce these skills throughout the day, in the course of other things, like in literature, asking, what was that character thinking? How do you think that that character was feeling when they made that choice? Were there other choices they might have made? When we bring to the fore these very skills that they're learning and get them to reflect on them in other situations, or say social studies, as you raise, there's some wonderful units that are integrated with social studies work, whether it's about the Holocaust and points at, choices that people faced on all sides of that horror, or things more involved in current events. Very often the very same sets of skills are ones we're seeing demonstrated or not demonstrated and resulting in problems that we have to deal with. So schools that have really taken this on very seriously find ways to integrate this throughout the school day and on the playground, after school, in their student support work, even on the sports playing fields. These same efforts to bring coherence to kids' experience and use the same vocabulary and a feelings vocabulary for kids really reinforces these skills and makes them stronger for them.
Yeah, sounds good. Would it, at the early levels, would it be taught by a separate teacher or the classroom?
Well, ideally, this is the classroom teacher. Every teacher in the school. I can tell you how this works in places that are doing it well, and have embraced it as a whole school approach. Every person in the school, including the lunchroom staff, the bus drivers, and the lady who greets you in the office at the school, are all on the same page and learning about social and emotional learning. They may have signs up that say we're a caring school community, for example, or and people learn the same sets of skills together. The adults learn together, and one of the new sets of findings that's coming out is that it's creating much better adult communities. People who learn how to deal with one another respectfully, how to be respectful listeners, effective communicators, and in fact their instruction is improving, which seems to be one of the reasons for grades going up for kids. It's not just kids' own skills, but the adults are becoming better teachers, and job turnover is declining as people feel part of a really caring adult community of effective learners. So when everyone's doing it, it's best. Some schools start out and say, you know what, we can't afford to do that. We're going to have our social workers or our student support personnel come in and do this and co-teach it with our teachers and demonstrate it for us how to do this, and then we'll turn it over to our teachers. Some strictly keep it with the outsider, but then there's fewer opportunities for the teacher to really take advantage of those teachable moments throughout the day to show that this is just a way of being for kids and not something we do 20 minutes 3 times a week. So ideally it is the whole staff.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Well, that again, to just to underline the idea that for any people who might be concerned that somehow there's some part of the curriculum now, something that's really important that we're taking out, you're not really doing that because we're not talking about that much time spent in this particular activity. And yet at the same time, you are talking about spending some little time in a structured way dealing with these things. Tell us some more about what exactly happens in these sessions that are devoted specifically to this, to trying to teach or encourage these skills.
Well, I would like to answer that, but I would just like to go back a second and say that wonderful teachers and wonderful schools are already doing SEL, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Good teachers care about their children's development in every realm, and especially at the elementary level, teachers are very attuned to childhood development in many different realms, emotionally, socially, and cognitively. So great teachers do this. What a social and emotional learning framework gives is more of a focus and a purpose to this. So in our own state, our state is leading the world really in this area, because in Illinois, our State Board of Education has now adopted learning standards in social and emotional learning for all kids, K to 12. And these are up on the State Board of Ed's website and in teachers' portfolios, right along with math and language arts and social studies standards. So this is now the law of the land for this to be taught in schools. And we have our standards specify the skills that we want kids to have. And that, again, has really given a focus to others' efforts to create a caring environment and help kids to develop. It really helps them focus in on specific skills that they're trying to work toward. What happens in the classroom? I can say, there's so many different approaches. I will give specific examples, but let me say for the educators and even the parents who are listening, CASEL was funded by the U.S. Department of Education to review the nationally available programs, the curricula that are available to help schools to do this. And we looked at over 250. Some call themselves Character Ed. Some are prevention programs, prevention of substance abuse. Some are anti-bullying programs. They don't all call themselves SEL, but what they have in common when you unpack them and see what they're doing, they're all teaching kids these same sets of skills, which is to those that are evidence-based, I should say, and those that are high quality. They teach children to be aware of themselves, be aware of how to manage their feelings without, for example, anesthetizing themselves with drugs if it's a substance abuse prevention program. You know, they're coming up with alternative strategies for coping with problems. These are all what we would call SEL. And CASEL reviewed, we distilled the group to 80 that were nationally available and were more than 1 year, because 1 year alone does not really create lasting change for children. So they had to be at least 2 years with a scope and sequence. And they had to be targeting the general population of kids. This isn't just for troubled kids. It's for all kids. I like to say it's about bringing out the best, not just avoiding the worst in our children. And so we have a document called Safe and Sound. It's freely available on our website, and it reviews these 80 programs. There's hundreds of pages of information in this document on the programs themselves, with links to the programs explaining in what context the research about their impacts was developed. Was it with an inner-city school? Was it in suburban classrooms? So that individual schools and parents can find out the program that really works best for them. So that is a great resource for those who are listening. These programs vary from very explicit classroom instruction. Today, children, we're going to turn to page 2 in our workbooks, and we're going to look at our feeling faces, and we're going to learn names for feelings. It may be that simple at an elementary level, and then learn vocabulary for feelings, learn how to recognize it in others. That would be an example of one piece of a 40 lesson sequence that ultimately combines individual sets of skills into problem-solving skills. And as children get older, the challenges and the examples get more sophisticated and more complex, just as their real-world challenges get more complex. Others, and in fact even many that teach these skills, also have a big component that has to do with the climate of the school, where, for example, the adults learn in their own training to greet every child by name at the door, especially important at a high school level and middle school when kids are feeling pretty distant from the adults and often feel that nobody cares whether they show up or not. One of the shocking findings in the national survey data, and it's true of our Illinois schools as well, is that it's only a minority of our high school kids. In some studies, only about 25% to 30% of high school students report that any teacher would care if they showed up or not, that anyone would even notice. And many say that they have no one that they could go to with a problem in our schools. And we know that having an adult who you could go to in the school is an enormously strong predictor of a child finishing high school. Those kids who don't have an adult are much more likely to fail to finish high school. Those who feel they have an adult they could go to about a problem, far more likely, 4 to 5 times more likely. So this is another element of social and emotional learning, is making that connection with children so they feel individually known and cared for, which, again, good teachers are doing already, but it's a great reminder, and there are specific ways we can really convey that to kids.
We're just about at our midpoint here. We have another caller to bring into the conversation. Let's do that. And this is someone in Champaign, line 2. Hello.
Yeah. As a grandparent with a the first 3.5-year-old granddaughter.
Congratulations.
My daughter certainly has dealt with this. Initially, the frustration that the baby has, you know, before he can verbalize, you know, teaching her sign language to handle that, and now at this age is to work with her with words so that she can express her anger, you know, that kind of thing. Is there a book for parents to help parents, you know, with dealing with children this age that you would recommend?
You know, what I'm going to do is send you and your daughter to our website. Our organization, it's a mouthful, but for short we say CASEL, C-A-S-E-L. If you go to the website, www.casel.org, and click on our links to resources for parents, we have a parent packet of materials of things that give you ideas. You can stick it on your refrigerator for ways to work with the school and with your child in this area. But there's also some terrific books listed there. There's so many that I actually would have trouble singling things out right now.
Okay.
But it's a great question, and there are some terrific materials. I guess I would say John Gottman's book, Raising an Emotionally Intelligent Child, is an absolutely outstanding book for parents who want to help kids to deal with their feelings effectively and have kids who are really capable as they grow up in these interpersonal ways.
Yeah, I think Gottman was a graduate at the University of Illinois, the psych department. He has a wonderful book on relationships.
Yes, and he has books for parents for raising kids that are just first rate and very empirically sound, well-validated, great guidance for parents.
What's your perspective on the limited? My view is the limited perspective of testing on the No Child Left Behind.
Mm-hmm.
Any comment there?
I know that I think the intention of that law was terrific, and I think that that testing, if the tests themselves are valid, can be very valuable as feedback to teachers and parents and children themselves on areas and ways in which they need to improve. I personally would love to see No Child Left Behind expanded to include social and emotional development and assuring that that is something that we're attending to along with math and language arts skills. And I'll be working in that direction, and my organization will be, to expand what we look at with kids. I think the accountability makes a lot of sense, but not our draconian consequences for that.
But you also teach for the test, though. You know?
Right. That's definitely a danger, and you hear that from many dispirited teachers and principals.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Our guest in this part of Focus 580, Mary Utney O'Brien. She is executive director of CASEL, that is the Collaborative for Academic, Social, and Emotional Learning at the University of Illinois, Chicago. She's also a professor of psychology there. Her training is in sociology. She has been the senior survey director at the National Opinion Research Center at University of Chicago. She also was associate professor of epidemiology in the School of Public Health at U of I Chicago, where she taught the school's first courses in the epidemiology of HIV and AIDS. We're talking about social and emotional learning, and the argument that she and people at there at CASEL and a lot of other educators make, that this is something that goes hand in hand with teaching the academic skills that we expect students to teach. And they make the argument that if you include these things, social and emotional skills, in the school curriculum at every level, and that kids learn to do things like manage their emotions and have a caring attitude towards others, establish positive relationships, that not only are those things good on the face of them in and of themselves, but actually you find that the academic performance of students actually improves.
David, could I add one other piece
to that? Yes, sure.
We're very excited at CASEL because our president, Roger Weisberg, just returned to Illinois from Singapore, where the government of Singapore is taking SEL nationwide and making this a standard part of their curriculum. And it's interesting, you were just mentioning that these are valuable skills in themselves, but they also contribute to academics. In Singapore, which many of us wouldn't think of as the first nation that comes to mind when we think of enlightened and whole child education, and I'm thinking of the days of caning kids for dropping gum on the sidewalk, in Singapore, the impetus for this has come from the business community. And the international business community is huge in Singapore, and they've been complaining to the Singapore government that the graduates of the schools there, while technically proficient, and in fact Singapore is at the top of international comparative tests in student performance in math and in science, these kids are coming out technically proficient, but they're not good problem solvers when they run into situations that haven't been dictated from above or seen before, that they're flummoxed. They're also very poor in working in the kind of collaborative work groups that the business world requires, most of which are cross-national in Singapore. So they're not good in these mixed race groups of the Chinese, Indian, Malay, and others, and they're just really not flexible, and finally, they're not creative. And so, interestingly, they came to CASEL. They visited us last year, visited schools with us, and have spent a lot of time with our research and decided this is what they needed to develop students for the 21st century workforce. We know in our own country that there's a commission that our Department of Labor has called Skills for the 21st Century. Half of those skills that the Department of Labor has defined as necessary for 21st century workers are exactly the social and emotional skills we're talking about. They're the ability to work effectively with diverse groups, listen effectively, be good problem solvers, and so on. So this is really equipping children with what they need in the marketplace as well.
One of the big buzzwords in education has been for a while now is accountability. Mm-hmm. People say that they say we need to be able to demonstrate what children are learning and that they are learning. And one way to do it, maybe not the best way, but one way to do that is with standardized tests. So we now have a lot of high-stakes testing going on. We have it in Illinois. We have it next door in Indiana. We have it other places. With what we're talking about here, social and emotional learning, I would think that it might not lend itself to being quantified in that way. Now, maybe there is a way that you can do that, but I guess the question is, in this particular case, with these kinds of skills, how do you go about measuring them and coming up with some determination that children are acquiring those skills?
You've asked just the question of the hour or the decade or the century when it comes to SEL. This is a critically important area that CASEL is devoting itself to, or one of two major areas that we're devoting ourselves to. If we can't show, well, there's two aspects to assessment, let me say. One is the accountability for the resources you've expended. I mean, I had a superintendent of a very large district, a $240 million a year district, tell me, Dr. O'Brien, if I don't have the PowerPoints to show my local Kiwanis Club on the impacts of all this work we're doing in the classroom in SEL, right along with the PowerPoints I show them on math and reading scores, it's just not going to fly. I have to really show what are we getting for our investment, what's changing for our kids. And so that's a kind of bottom-line accountability form of assessment. And the second kind of assessment that we need, which is something very current in the education world today, is assessment for instruction as opposed to assessment of instruction. That is the kind of testing that can be done in the classroom by a teacher to see where the skills are lacking and where there needs to be more attention focused by the teacher and by the child to develop the skills. So that's a kind of ongoing instructional practice, a kind of assessment. And both of those are critically important. Chicago Public Schools has been working with us and the American Institutes for Research to develop a school scorecard in this area. I can tell you that they are rolling out a scorecard that uses student-reported data to describe students' views of the safety, the climate, the support, the expectations, and finally their own skills in SEL. These will be going on the school's report card so that parents can compare. They're not using the language SEL, but they're looking at these qualities and saying, gee, is school X, how safe do the kids feel there, and how supported by their teachers, and how good do they say they are at problem solving, and how good do they say they are at controlling their anger, or really finding ways to use their words to solve problems. Gee, 75% say that this is the case at one school, but it's only 10% over here. I want to send my kid over there. So CPS is building this into their own public accountability, the ability to, so they've taken that tack of getting students to report on their own environments. They're starting at the high school level and eventually intending to bring this down to the elementary level. Others, we're working now with districts around the country, and we're developing our own with collaborating schools in Illinois, measures that can be used to assess individual kids' strengths and weaknesses in the areas that the Illinois standards are about, and I can share those standards with you if you'd like, but assessing those skills and then turning that into something that could be a very simple report card. I can tell you that we've looked at report cards from all over the state, and I'm talking about individual children's report cards that schools that you'd see at every elementary school and high school. We've done an analysis of the content of those, and it's the case that almost every school already has something that you could call the other side of the report card, sort of behavioral indicators about how children stay on task, their politeness, their ability to focus their attention. Interestingly, this is already on the report card. And our goal would be to create a coherent and similar set of items that every school could be using with an objective framework for making those judgments. That would be part of what teachers complete on each child each quarter. This could then become the basis for feedback to parents and engaging the parents in this development. It raises the profile of this issue in a more systematic way as opposed to just a few check marks on the back of a report card. And it really can give a focus, again, to the teachers' own efforts with individual children. It can also be aggregated up so that we can see if Mrs. Jones's teachers are doing better than Mr. Smith's, or whether school X has more work to do than school Y, or whether a whole district might have kids operating at different levels. So I think there's great potential there. It's not impossible to measure, but we're working all the time to make better, more valid measures in this area.
There are apparently a number of states there where they're talking about making this part of their curriculum. And here, actually, in the state of Illinois, as you've mentioned, it actually has happened. Mm-hmm. It is we now have we have state learning standards that say something about what it is we expect kids to be able to do and to learn and at certain points along their career, and that now social and emotional learning has become part of this. In what way is that part of the state learning standards?
Well, before SEL came along, there were 31 goals, educational goals, as I'm using the jargon of our state's education system, 31 goals in areas that included math, language arts, social sciences, health education, social studies, and so on. There were, I believe, 8 content areas like that, and SEL became the 9th and added 3 more goals, broad goals, to that. And within those goals are standards, just as there are within language arts, where there might be a broad goal and then a set of specific standards to be reached. Similarly, in SEL, we have broad goals with specific standards. Let me just illustrate. I said there were 3 goals in Illinois, and those goals have to do with the self. The first goal has to do with yourself. The second goal has to do with your relationships with others. And the third goal has to do with your problem-solving skills. And the first goal, which is for Illinois children to develop self-awareness and self-management skills to achieve school and life success, that goal has 3 standards. First is to identify and manage one's emotions and behavior. The second is to recognize personal qualities and external supports, so a self-awareness of skills. And the third is to demonstrate skills related to achieving personal and academic goals. That would be a child's ability to stay on task or to persist in the face of failure and setbacks and so on. So those goals become part of what teachers are instructed in colleges of education. They become part of what the learning standards that are to be taught to in classrooms. And I will confess that right now they have a pretty low profile. We don't have state tests or audits in the area right now that's statewide. So as you pointed out earlier, or your caller did, what gets assessed gets addressed. Mm-hmm. And teachers are really teaching to what they know is going to be measured and reported out. But these standards are out there. I know schools where for each lesson, for example, a teacher will write on the board the academic goal of the lesson and the social and emotional goal of the lesson. So a teacher might be having a literature circles and children working in groups talking to one another, and maybe the academic content has to do with understanding the motives of the characters. The social and emotional goal might be to develop ways to disagree with one another respectfully as they share opinions in a group. That would be an example of how it would manifest itself. And this would speak directly to the goal, to one of the Illinois standards of, under Goal 2, there's a standard that's demonstrate an ability to prevent, manage, and resolve interpersonal conflicts in constructive ways. So that would be an example of teaching to that goal.
We have some more callers here to bring in. Let's do that. We have somebody on cell phone here on line number one. We want to get right to them. Hello.
Hello. Thank you. It's a wonderful program. I am interested in early childhood education, and have there been programs in teacher training and also applied studies in preschools that is practical, and are there best practice models out there someplace?
As a matter of fact, early childhood is really the path breaker. The work in early childhood is terrific and very well developed, and I think folks who are in early childhood are very attuned to the intertwining of social, emotional, and cognitive development. The best Head Start programs address this, and on our website there's a terrific article by Weisberg and Denham that you can find, Roger Weisberg and Suzanne Denham, that really lays out all of the basics of SEL in early childhood. And it includes a lot of references that would be useful to you. But there's great work done in early childhood. And that work also shows very long-term impacts. Some of the best studies show that investment in early childhood education in social and emotional domains yields results of much higher graduation rates and workforce participation 20 years down the road. So it's an excellent investment.
So your website would have ideas about training possibilities and such. Are you a resource? Are you an agency that would send trainers out, or are you?
We don't do training. I'm sorry. You could think of us as an international clearinghouse of information for people. We don't promote any one training. We're more like the consumer reports for others. We do our Safe and Sound Guide provides information on individual programs and then links you to those program developers. We try to create informed consumers and set the bar high for the field itself, that the work should be evidence-based and well-validated and high-quality studies. And then we do our best to get the word out to people. We have a newsletter for educators and scientists, and we encourage people to sign up for that, too, on our website. And our last issue, for example, was on social and emotional learning and cultural competency, whether it's across race, gender, income lines, you know, the kinds of things that we need to take into account when we do this work to tailor it appropriately and to be skillful ourselves in these situations of difference. And we also have early childhood information in the same vein.
Okay. Well, that's very useful. Well, thank you very much.
All right, thank you for the call. Well, I should probably here introduce again our guest for anyone who might just have tuned in or been with us for the last 10 minutes or so. Mary Utney O'Brien is the executive director of CASEL, that is the Collaborative for Academic, Social, and Emotional Learning at the University of Illinois, Chicago. She's also a professor of psychology there. And if you do have internet access and you're interested in this issue or to find out more about CASEL, you can indeed go to their website. website, which is www.casel.org. And there you can follow the various links and learn more about the collaborative and the issues. And here on the program, of course, questions are welcome too. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. We have someone else who'd like to talk with us in Urbana, line two. Hello.
Yeah, hello. I just recently read a article from the Associated Press in the local paper, surprisingly, that noted that at a CDC conference, it was announced that they found that more than 11% of all Latino students, and actually 15% of Latino girls, say they've attempted suicide. And that's, for Latino girls at least, that's twice the rate of white and blacks. And so this whole idea of helping people get quality relationships and handle their feelings better, I'm very interested in. And so it makes me wonder, though, after listening to you, I don't hear any specific programs or mention of any specific programs that would address the particular needs of, say, first-generation immigrant children. Because as I understand it, you're one of the key things about your programs, the programs you're talking about, is language skills. And therefore, when you're dealing with people with underdeveloped language skills, they're going to children are going to have difficulty expressing things and or socializing with others. So I'm wondering if you have any comments about that.
Well, I can tell you that the disturbing statistics you cite are absolutely true. The Youth Risk Behavior Survey was just released, the 2005 data. In fact, I pulled it up on my computer even as you were speaking, that shows us the kinds of things that kids are struggling with right now. There's a stunning proportion of our kids who've contemplated suicide, who have felt sad or hopeless. I'm looking at right now at a slide. This is the question asked of a representative sample of youth, of white, black, and Hispanic youth across America. The question asked almost every day for 2 weeks or more in a row, I've stopped doing some usual activities because I feel so sad or hopeless. We have 36% of Hispanic students saying yes to that, 28% of black kids, and 26% of white kids, and far more females, well over a third of females and about a fifth of the males reporting this hopelessness. And there's a whole series of questions on this that ultimately come to suicide attempts in the data that you cited. This is exactly what SEL was designed because of. SEL came about, these social competence promotion programs really began in the late 70s when clinical psychologists and school psychologists and those working with these kids, who are really all kids, this crosses all income lines and it does cross all racial groups, although some are feeling it more than others, we realized that there is absolutely not the capacity of the mental health systems to cope with the problems once they arise. If it's one out of four kids and one out of three kids in our schools that are dealing with these serious concerns, depression, suicidal thoughts, and so on, what we had to do, we realized as a science and as clinicians and as educators, is we had to prevent this. We had to prevent as much of this as possible. We had to equip kids to cope with what life is throwing at them. And that's a lot of what SEL is about. It's giving kids the tools to handle life situations. School is a life situation, but things outside of school. And it is specific. There's long-term research that shows that, in fact, children who are given SEL instruction in their early years and throughout have much lower rates of exactly what you're talking about, are much better problem solvers and copers, and know how to look for positives and develop positive solutions to tough, you know, to realistically tough circumstances. So this is very, very important. I'm not sure where you were going with your language arts or your language issues, except to say any, you know, adolescence throws a lot of tough things at us, and kids who are coping with language issues on top of that have even more to cope with. And the more kids are equipped with problem-solving skills that they can bring to any sets of problems, the better off they are, the less likely they are to show these kinds of disturbances, the better able they are to cope.
Yeah, well, it just seems to me that if you don't make some special effort in language skills, it's just not going to be very effective for quite a few people, quite a few kids. And I was just wondering if anybody had tried to address that specific, you know, problem.
Well, you know, I maybe not in the way you intend, but just giving kids a vocabulary for expressing what's going on for them, even if it's in, even if they're monolingual, you know, even if it's in English majority speaking, you know, kids, many don't have that vocabulary at all, and they don't know what to do with feelings, and just simply even being able to name them and to know that others have them is a huge gift to kids, to take them from this sort of just the buzz and maelstrom of feelings floating around in them. And I know that the programs that we review in Safe and Sound have been developed, some with very different populations in mind, and have been tailored, some for African-American populations, some for others. I know for Native populations, Native American populations, there are specific programming that's been tailored to them. I can't say off the top of my head that I know of those geared toward Hispanic kids, but it would be worth looking in Safe and Sound to see that. Also, this last issue of Castle Connections, which is on our website, the newsletter I mentioned, addresses lists a number of programs that specifically address ethnic differences, and it's really packed with resources in the area that you're talking about.
Well, I think there's a specific, you know, a very severe need in this particular ethnic group, and I hope somebody will take notice of that. Thank you.
All right. Well, we're down to the point here. We have a couple of minutes left. One thing we might talk about is parental involvement. Certainly, we talked earlier about how much in the conversation we've been having now for as long as I can remember about school reform, people have talked about the accountability issue. And people also at the same time have said, well, we really need to get parents involved in the education of their kids. They need to be involved in the school. They need to meet the teachers. They need to make sure their kids are doing their homework. They need to try and even work with their kids if possible. In this respect, when we're talking about social and emotional learning, parents got to be on board here too, right?
Absolutely. The more a teacher can reinforce these lessons across the school day, the more schools and families can be working together, the more powerful this is for kids. And in the guide that I mentioned, Safe and Sound, one of the ways in which we rate every program, all 80 of the programs, is the extent to which and the quality of the parent engagement piece of that program. Very few have nothing at all to do with families. They offer nothing other than classroom-based activities. Others have really rich and extensive materials, including workbooks to take home and active activities that are school-wide that involve parents and regular homework activities that involve parents in a really non-threatening way where parents can be experts without being academic experts. And, for example, sharing stories about their own lives that the children can ask them questions about, proudest moments or things in the stories from the family history that really can be engaging for parents, that really reinforce the lessons going on in the classroom. So I suggest that people look at that factor in taking if a family involvement is very important to a school or to a school committee looking at this kind of thing. And we do know that students do much better when their parents are very involved. The problem is most teachers and parents don't know how to quote, do involvement other than to just be tuned in all the time. And we do have resources on our website for ways to engage parents that, you know, educators can look at and that parents can use to be creative. And I'm sure your audience has heard many times that, you know, just as kids are pushing you away as they become adolescents in middle school and high school, and at the same time parents are less sure of how to contribute, they know what to do in elementary school, how to be a room mom or help chaperone a trip, it becomes harder to know how to do that work. But that's exactly when kids need deep parent involvement and hanging in there. So I'll just repeat what we all hear, which is that don't listen to what kids say. Know that they really do want you to stay connected and stay involved in this in the SEL realm and in their school realm.
We're just really here at the point that we have to finish. Again, I guess I would tell people, if you were interested in finding out some more about the collaborative, the one we've been here talking about, of which our guest is the executive director, you can go to their website. This is the Collaborative for Academic, Social, and Emotional Learning, based at the University of Illinois at Chicago. CASEL, C-A-S-E-L, the initials, that's what they go by. And their website is www.casel.org. So you can find out more about them and look at some of the resources there that they have and that they can link you to. Our guest in this hour, Mary Utney O'Brien, is the executive director of CASEL. She is also professor of psychology at the University of Illinois, Chicago. And Dr. O'Brien, we want to say to you thanks very much for talking with us today.
Thank you so much.